The church is in Africa at the service of reconciliation, peace and justice.
The church is in Africa at the service of reconciliation, peace and justice.
This is the Africa service of Vatican Radio.
Welcome to our half-hour daily program for Africa.
In today's program, you can hear our feature, the African Synod, the Church Alive in Africa Today. First, however, our bulletin of church news, followed by African News Panorama. We shall close today's program with Millennium Appointment. I am Festus Tarawali. Pope Francis sent out a tweet on Monday on Christian Witness. Writing through his @pontifex handle, the Pope said witnesses do not lose themselves in words, but rather they bear fruit. They do not complain about others and the world, but start with themselves. Witnesses, said the Pope, remind us that God is not to be proven, but shown, not announced with proclamations, but witnessed by example. Meanwhile, among the Pope's activities on Monday were separate audiences with Cardinal Luis Antonio Tagle, Prefect of the Congregation for the Evangelization of Peoples, and Archbishop Michael Francis Crotty, Apostolic Nuncio in Burkina Faso and Niger. The Pope on Monday also met with Israel's outgoing ambassador to the Holy See, Mr. Oren David. At the Angelus on Sunday, Pope Francis remembered the victims of flooding in Mexico and prayed for all those unjustly held in foreign countries. After reciting the Marian prayer, the Pope said, "I am near the victims of the flooding that happened in the state of Hidalgo in Mexico, especially to the sick who died in the hospital of Tula and their families. Heavy rainfall on the 7th of September caused the Tula and Rosas rivers to break their banks, leading to the death of at least 17 people at the hospital in Tula caring for several COVID-19 patients." And turning his attention to those detained outside their countries of origin, Pope Francis said, "I want to assure my prayers for people who have been unjustly detained in foreign countries. Unfortunately," he continued, "there are several cases for different and sometimes complex causes. I hope that in the due fulfillment of justice, these people might return as soon as possible to their homeland," the Pope said. The faithful in Slovakia are being encouraged to give generously in a charity collection to be taken up on the 26th of September for those in need in Cuba as part of the fruits of the recently concluded apostolic visit of Pope Francis to the European nation, Father Benedict Majáky reports.
The Catholic bishops of Slovakia have announced a charity collection for the people of Cuba, where socioeconomic challenges made worse by the COVID-19 pandemic have made for difficult living conditions for citizens. The initiative, conceived by Slovakia's bishops and inspired by Pope Francis's recently concluded apostolic visit to the country, is intended to draw attention to the plight of the brothers and sisters in Cuba who are in difficulty but who remain neglected. Pope Francis visited Slovakia from the 12th to the 15th of September. In a statement on the website of the Bishops' Conference of Slovakia, the bishops encouraged the Slovak faithful to give generously during the collection, which will be taken up on Sunday, 26th of September, in parishes across the country. The bishops also note Pope Francis' repeated calls to help our brothers and sisters in need, adding that the aim is to share as others have shared with us in the past when we needed it. The economy in Cuba has seen a severe decline in recent times, and existing inequalities have been even more exacerbated by the coronavirus pandemic. In July, in the country's largest anti-government demonstrations in decades, Cubans took to the streets to protest against poor living conditions and the lack of basic amenities, including healthcare, amid the COVID-19 pandemic. Prior to the protests, the coronavirus health emergency had dealt a huge blow to the country's main source of revenue, tourism, which came to a halt as a result of travel restrictions. On top of that, widespread food and medicine shortages, as well as growing inflation, were already a source of dissatisfaction among Cuban citizens. With the arrival of the Delta variant, Cuba faced a further explosion of coronavirus cases, putting further pressure on the country's already strained health system. Cuba has recorded about 790,000 coronavirus cases with over 6,000 deaths throughout the pandemic. Currently, over 15 million vaccine doses have been administered so far in efforts to curb the spread of the pandemic. I'm Father Benedict Mayaki.
Caritas Switzerland has released a document calling for the food we eat to be more climate friendly. The document comes ahead of the UN Summit on Food Systems to be held in New York later this week. Lydia O'Kane has that report.
There is a need for a change of course in favour of food that is more equitable, sustainable and crisis-proof. That's the view of Caritas Switzerland in a document released on Monday ahead of the United Nations Summit on Food Systems to be held in New York on the 23rd of September. The document highlights that more than 800 million people in the world suffer from hunger, and this figure could soon exceed 1 billion due to global warming and the coronavirus crisis. One third of the world's population is undernourished and does not have access to sufficient healthy and balanced food. Caritas is therefore calling on Switzerland to reverse course and make a contribution to making world food more equitable, crisis-proof and climate-friendly. Caritas Switzerland points out that what is urgently needed is a change in the agricultural and food model, aiming more strongly and consistently at agro-ecological agriculture, through which higher yields and incomes can be achieved by practicing cultivation that respects the soil and the environment. With this in mind, the agency is appealing to the Swiss Federal Council and Parliament to commit themselves to this nationwide goal. The aim must be to make environmentally friendly, healthy and fairly produced food cheaper and more competitive. The adoption of trade policies must therefore be fair and respectful of the environment, so as to strengthen the human rights of small farmers and producers, and to promote food security and sovereignty in the poorest countries, Caritas says, recalling that environmental warming is advancing unstoppably and that every half degree increase brings with it significant extreme temperatures, increasing the intensity of heavy rainfall, intensifying drought periods in many regions and worsening the food base of the most deprived. Caritas is calling on Switzerland to assume its responsibility and act in a climate-friendly manner by a socially equitable adaptation of the requirements of the Paris Agreement and strengthening its international cooperation on climate issues. Ultimately, the document concludes it is in Switzerland's interest to provide greater support to the poorest countries and to pursue a low-carbon and climate-friendly development path.
That was Lydia O'Kane reporting. You are tuned to the Africa Service of Vatican Radio.
African News Panorama.
A court in Rwanda convicted on Monday Paul Rusesabagina of terrorism and other related crimes. Rusesabagina, a former hotel manager in Kigali, credited with saving hundreds of people during the 1994 genocide, was arrested last year after a plane he thought was bound for Burundi instead landed in the Rwandan capital Kigali. He was on the list of people wanted by the Rwandan government for financing rebels. Prosecutors accused him of being one of the leaders of an opposition coalition whose armed wing is known as the National Liberation Front, the FLN, which carried out a series of attacks in 2018 in which 9 civilians were killed. Mr. Rusesabagina was declared a hero after the 1994 Rwandan genocide, when it was revealed that he saved hundreds of lives from extremist Interahamwe militias. A film known as Hotel Rwanda was acted in Hollywood to portray his heroism. He was not in court on Monday when he was convicted. The military rulers in Guinea-Conakry said on Sunday that they had arrested a former industry minister Thibault Kamara, who was also the advisor to ousted President Alpha Conde. Mr. Kamara was later released, but a number of items, including computers and mobile phones, were seized from his home. He is accused of corruption by the military and of violating a commitment to stay neutral towards the military administration. Meanwhile, the military rulers said at the weekend that it will be the people of Guinea-Conakry to determine the future of their country, and not the regional body, the Economic Community of West African States, ECOWAS. This comes after ECOWAS demanded that the military organizes elections within 6 months, and that the ousted President Conde should be released from detention without conditions, and be left to decide whether to stay in the country or to go in exile. The military said Conde would not be allowed to leave the country, and that elections would be held after the ongoing consultations with the citizens are completed. Voters in the Gambia have criticized President Adama Barrow for allying with the party of exiled former President Yahya Jammeh ahead of the presidential election scheduled for December this year. Jammeh ruled Gambia for 22 years, during which his government committed gross violations of human rights. After losing the election in 2017, he refused to leave office until the regional body, the Economic Community of West African States, ECOWAS, threatened to force him out. Survivors of Jammeh's atrocities have expressed concerns that they will never be accorded justice following the coalition, and after reports that Jammeh was preparing to return to the country as a free citizen.
The African Synod, the Church Alive in Africa Today.
Hello and welcome to the program. I am Festus Tarawali. In this edition, we shine a spotlight on the recent pastoral letter of the Kenya Conference of Catholic Bishops, in which the members of the conference called for reconciliation and political tolerance in the East African nation, among other issues. The pastoral letter was released on Wednesday under the title, A Call to Keep Our Hope Alive. Reading the text during a press conference in Nairobi, the chairman of the conference, Archbishop Martin Kivuva Musonde of Mombasa, said the document was the result of a process of deep collective reflection by Kenya's bishops. They began by commending the government for the way it has handled the COVID-19 pandemic. However, they condemned the double standards exhibited by politicians who continue to hold large public gatherings in total disregard of the government's health protocols. Let us listen to Archbishop Kivuva Musonde.
We applaud the majority of Kenyans who have continued to adhere to the Minister of Health protocols on the COVID-19 prevention. We, however, note with concern that despite the government's announcing suspension of all public gathering in our country, a section of our political leaders has continually defied this directive. It is unfortunate that no action has been taken on all those leaders who are objectively flouting these protocols.
After warning against using Catholic parish churches for political campaigns, the bishops in the 9-page document went on to address the rift between President Uhuru Kenyatta and his deputy William Ruto, calling on the two men to reconcile. Here is Archbishop Anthony Muheria of Nyeri reading that part of the pastoral letter.
It is an open and sad reality that the President and the Deputy President of the Republic of Kenya are not reading from the same script. The public exchanges that have been witnessed are dangerous for the prevailing peace and tranquility in the country and cannot be taken lightly. They are already creating anxiety among the people and have potential to ignite political violence if not addressed with immediate effect. We are deeply concerned that if this open disagreement between the President and the Deputy President is taken up by their supporters, the trickle-down effect it could generate across the country would be dire to even contemplate. In a young democracy like ours, it is important that there is unity among the top leaders, as this gives confidence to the people. We call upon the president and the deputy president to seek ways of reconciling and working together for the sake of the unity of our country. As church leaders, we are ready to step in and mediate a working arrangement between the two leaders that our country badly needs, as provided by the Constitution.
After commenting on the recent court ruling regarding the country's Building Bridges initiative and the proposed referendum, the Kenyan bishops warned against postponing next year's elections.
We are aware that there has been talk of postponing the general elections. This is sending confusing signals and creating needless apprehension amongst the people and predictably the political class. We reiterate our position that the August 2022 general elections must proceed as scheduled. Postponing the elections will only heighten political tension, anxiety, and unrest. The government and the IBC should come out authoritatively and confirm the date for the next general election and ensure that all constitutional requirements for holding the elections are put in place.
And in number 6 of the pastoral letter, the Catholic bishops expressed concern over the perennial challenge of political violence in Kenya and called for election reforms before the next general elections.
We wish to sound a loud warning against utterances and attitudes of possible drums of war all over our country. If unchecked, such utterances and attitudes may spark off election violence during the forthcoming electioneering period. It is thus imperative that institutions like the National Cohesion and Integration Commission, the IEBC, and security agencies begin to map out hotspots and violence instigators and violent instigators, encounter them peacefully in good time and within the confines of the law. Every effort must be made to stop the culture of political violence that has been entrenching itself every time we approach the general elections. In this regard, we are deeply concerned about the spate of violence taking place in Laikipia, Marsabit, and Kerio Valley along the border between Baringo and Elgeyo Marakwet counties. This violence has led to needless loss of life, property, and displacement of the people. Having listened carefully to the statement issued by those in charge of security in our country, there is every indication that this violence has been politically instigated and is a result of the heightening political tension in the country. This is not the first time that the areas affected are experiencing armed violence in what seems to be a politically motivated agenda. We reiterate that the government has an obligation to provide security to all Kenyans. Communities in Laikipia, Marsabit, and Kerio Valley deserve security and peace so that they can go about their daily lives. The spate of anarchy in these areas must be stopped. Residents must be assured of their security. No resources should be spared to restore calm in the disturbed areas. On behalf of the people whose lives have been shattered, property destroyed, and their perception of Kenya as a country of peace ruined, we urge the government to extend full support to them, to enable them to reconstruct their lives. At the same time, it is incumbent upon all Kenyans to promote and maintain peace and shun all acts of hatred, discrimination, and violence. We also extend our sympathies to the affected families and assure them of our prayers and support.
The bishops further expressed concern over the drought situation affecting some Kenyan regions, and in conclusion, they encouraged Kenyans to pray for peace, tolerance, and justice. And that's all for this edition of the African Synod, The Church Alive in Africa Today. Till the same time next week, I am Festus Tarawali.
And now, our feature Millennium Appointment. Reports from different countries show that some ministries of health have authorized the administration of mixed COVID-19 vaccines to increase the efficacy of the vaccine. Efficacy is the measure of how well a vaccine works when given to people. The higher the efficacy, the more effective the vaccine is in protecting the recipient of the vaccine from getting infected with the disease they have been vaccinated against. On the other hand, mixing vaccines means a person is inoculated for the first dose with one brand of the vaccine, for example AstraZeneca, but for the second dose, the same person is inoculated with another brand of the vaccine from a different manufacturer, for example Moderna. Dr. Kate O'Brien is the director of the Immunization, Vaccines and Biologicals Department of the World Health Organization. She explains.
There are over 17 vaccines that are being used around the world now, and most countries have more than one vaccine that's being used in the program. So what would be easiest for countries and for people is to say, you know, one COVID vaccine is like another, and I can have one dose from one product and a different dose from another product. But we don't actually have the evidence for most of that mixing and matching. We do have evidence on both the immunogenicity and the safety of combining an AstraZeneca vaccine dose with either of the mRNA products, the Pfizer, the Moderna products. And that evidence shows that you get a really good response from an immune perspective, and these are safe things to do. What we know is that you get a better response if you start with the AstraZeneca vaccine and then give the mRNA vaccine, but both approaches can work. Apart from that, we don't yet have the evidence on other mix and match regimens, but those trials are underway and we're eagerly awaiting to see the results of the trials.
Traditionally, vaccines are prepared by weakening the microbes that cause the disease against which people are to be vaccinated. The weakened microbes, whether viruses or bacteria, stimulate the body to produce antibodies for self-defense. With regard to COVID-19, only the AstraZeneca vaccine has prepared in this way. The other vaccines, such as Pfizer and Moderna, have been prepared by including in the product an artificial protein similar to that found in the coronavirus, which causes COVID-19. Once the protein is injected into our body, it stimulates it to produce antibodies that will protect us from the invasion of the coronavirus. This type of vaccine is what Dr. Kate O'Brien has referred to as mRNA. She explains if the mixing of the traditionally prepared vaccine and the mRNA vaccine is really safe for our health.
We have had clinical trials done combining with a first dose, either AstraZeneca or an mRNA vaccine, and then the second dose, switching over to the other product. And what we know about the safety is that the amount of reaction in your arm and some of the general short-term reactions that people get, not feeling well or low-grade fever, are generally speaking the same whether you mix and match or whether you use the same regimen. So we do have safety evidence on this, and that's an important attribute of anything that we would recommend, is to be sure we've looked at the safety already.
Some health experts have suggested that people could also be given fractional doses of the COVID-19 vaccines to minimize waste. A fractional dose of a vaccine refers to the administration of a reduced volume of the vaccine dose. Dr. O'Brien explains more.
The clinical trials that were done for these vaccines did research to figure out what dose that people should receive, and those clinical trials have shown that when you're given those vaccines with those doses, we have very high protection against severe disease. But we know that in the future there may be some evidence that says that there may be a need for booster doses, or it may be possible for some of the vaccines that we have to reduce the dose and optimize the supply by doing that. The research to evaluate whether or not a fraction of the usual dose, whether that's effective, that research is going on. We don't have the answer to that question yet, but it certainly is an area that we're looking at carefully, and we expect that in the future that evidence will tell us whether or not, if boosters are needed, whether we should use the full dose that you receive as your primary doses, or whether we should be giving a part of that dose, a fraction of that dose. And so waiting for that research to mature and to become available, for now, we don't recommend fractional doses, but we're looking forward to that research coming forward.
That was Dr. Kate O'Brien, the director of the Immunization, Vaccines and Biologicals Department of the World Health Organization. I am Johnny Baptist Tomosime.
You are tuned to the Africa Service of Vatican Radio. In our next program at the same time tomorrow, you can hear our feature, Justice and Peace. I am Festus Tarawali, and do join us then. Praise be Jesus Christ. Laudetur Jesus Christus.